Steve Russell, and it's tape number 418, side 2, December the 7th, 1979. There have been a lot of important deaths taking place, and I want to run them down with you for this side of the tape, and probably next week if I can put the uranium matter aside. As I said before, we're going to begin 1980 in three more weeks, and 1970 saw some very important or interesting people pass away. Charles de Gaulle, 1970, J. Edgar Hoover in 72, Howard Hughes in 76, Hubert Humphrey, who worked along and was paid off by Howard Hughes, passed as a liberal and worked with the fascist war machine, died in 78, Lyndon Johnson in 1973, Charles Lindbergh in 74, Pope Paul VI, Mr. Montini, the Secretary of the Vatican at one time in 1978, Martha Mitchell, 1976, Aristotle Onassis, 1975, and Nelson Rockefeller. Those were some pretty big movers that passed away in the 70s, very important people that affected our lives for the next 1,000 years to come. I really think they did. Hoover, Hughes, Johnson, Lindbergh, certainly, and Montini, the Pope Paul VI, Onassis, Rockefeller, and Martha Mitchell. These people did affect our lives. I made a hit list. Jimmy Carter's mother made a list, thought that Khomeini should be killed. I made a hit list for this year. Maybe in the 1980s or quickly in the order of appearances, Brzezinski, Henry Kissinger, Prince Bernhard of the Netherlands, David Rockefeller, Paul Luxalt with Ronald Reagan, Martin Bormann, Mr. Mengele's down in Paraguay, Mr. Somoza, Adolf Hitler, if he's still in Switzerland. A lot of you people don't believe that, but I've been told by different sources, and I don't have any reason to disbelieve it. We'll find out. Someday you'll find out. And there are a few other people I have on the hit list, but the world will be a better place when these movers that are holding on, the remnants of that other machine, are gone. So if you make your dartboards, you might pin their name up and do a little voodoo on them, if you believe in that, and see if we can't cling the world out of these people that are just hell-bent on creating death and death machines all over the world. Jack Anderson wrote an article. This was November the 16th, but I haven't had a chance to share it with you on the tapes, titled Nixon Helped Rich Nazis Stay in the United States. Another black chapter in Nixon's history that has been hidden. And he says that he's found this out in secret government files, but of course we know that he's talking about the Wanted Search for the Nazis, that book by Mr. Blum, and it talks about the offices of Nixon being used for Nikolai Maloxa and the dummy front, the Western Tube Company. Nikolai Maloxa was the head of the Iron Guard in Romania, a Nazi with links to the Odessa, and down to Argentina, where he connected with various people involved in the Kennedy assassination. It's interesting that for 3 months in a row, Jack Anderson has had articles, one on Operation Condor, the assassination team coming out of Chile, the colonial dignitas. The next month, he did one on Project Paperclip and the importation of Nazis in this country. And then this last month, he's done one on Nixon and Maloxa and the Iron Guard. It's interesting that he's spacing these out, and he should be encouraged, if you want to write and commend him for this and ask him for even more information. There's another article this last month of Rosalind Carter's in the Washington Post, and I didn't see it in our local papers. This was just done by Maxine Cheshire, and it's a picture of Rosalind with a person, and I did one tape on John Ellsworth, a man, an agent provocateur that was with Rosalind Carter in the White House, who set up the Aldermont scene where the Rolling Stones played and a Mr. Meredith was killed on camera to break up the hippie rock scene out at Aldermont, California. And this same provocateur was now in with a children's fund and working in the White House through Rosalind Carter, associated with her. But this article says that on April the 11th, 1979, a picture was taken at the Capitol Hilton Hotel with a man named James V. Jimmy Eppolito, the son of a powerful New York City narcotics and loan-sharking figure, the son of James B. Eppolito. A White House photographer recorded the scene, promised an 8x10 glossy picture to Eppoletto. The promise was never kept, though, because Eppoletto and his the father and son were gunned down in a mob killing in New York, October the 1st. It is widely believed that the federal law enforcement circles here and in New York felt that they might be alive today if Jimmy Eppoletto hadn't been photographed in the White House with Rosalynn Carter. They became very visible when they were seen with Mrs. Carter. They were working on a project called Cities in the Schools, and Rosalynn Carter was with John Eppoletto. The contact came through this Mr. Ellsworth, the agent provocateur from Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, and was set up by Maurice Weir, W-E-I-R. This man was part of a fraudulent children's appeal that worked with Mr. Ellsworth. One source close to the Eppoletto homicide investigation said last week that Jimmy's desire to fraternize publicly with Mrs. Carter made his underworld associates very nervous because there'd be too much heat on their gun running and drug trafficking. Eppoletto brought his wife to the luncheon in Washington, D.C., and they were photographed, as I say, with the First Lady. And then shortly afterwards, Eppoletto was gunned down with his father, and they were involved in a lot of criminal activities. The article says that Mr. Ellsworth's contacts in the Carter camp were with his Maurice Weir, who works in the White House running the Cities in Schools program in the District of Washington, D.C., and that this gang of Ellsworth and Eppoletto and all were buddies. They were close, and they were in the White House and were photographed in there. But it's interesting that these were some of the top crime families in the United States of America photographed in the White House. The father and son were both gunned down, and I don't know if you saw the article. I only saw it in one place, so I'm passing it on with you. Mrs. Carter's been with some nice people, Jim Jones, Mr. Gracie in Chicago, with James Eppoletto and that gang from organized crime. But the feeling was, as I say, that they had to be gunned down, the father and son, because it would cause too much attention. In fact, Eppoletto, it goes on to say, was under investigation at the time that he was seen with Mrs. Carter for a bust that had to do with $50 million worth of hashish. And that's a pretty nice gang to be with, for the Carters to be with, a guy who's in a questionable transaction for $50 million worth of hashish. He goes on to say the Secret Service doesn't check out people such as Eppoletto unless the president and his wife ask them to, and Mrs. Carter just refused last week to have a routine social visit check, and that's how he happened to get through. Now, I don't believe that the White House doesn't check out every single person, but here is a woman with a man involved with gun running, narcotics, and questioned by the law enforcement, and then gunned down, and there really was a lot of blackout about this in the major news media. Phoenix, Arizona has a story that went over the wire services about Underworld Ledger that lists five persons that were slain recently, five labor leaders and gambling interest personalities. They were involved with Richard Nixon and Jimmy Hoffa, and Nixon's name is on these books claiming that he received $500,000 for pardoning Jimmy Hoffa, but that they were involved in five murders related to the Teamsters Union and Hoffa, and this tied in with Richard Nixon. The murders were Jimmy Hoffa, who died in 1975, who was last seen in Detroit in a parking lot. Al Bramlett, head of the Culinary Union in Las Vegas, his body was found in the desert. He was abducted from the Las Vegas airport. Tamara Rand, a San Diego businessman. G. William Cuthard, former Nevada state legislature and ex-FBI agent. He had a dynamite blast in his car. And Edward Marty Bucciera, a gambling overseer at Caesar's Palace. Now, this article came out linking Richard Nixon in a ledger to these murders and this $500,000 payoff. And it is not investigated. Nixon goes on to New York and becomes quite prominent. When the Iranian crisis comes, he's on the air like a distinguished potentate, and no question about the ledgers or the scandal coming out in Phoenix, Arizona. But right after this came out, this was Friday, November the 18th, when those stories came out about the murders. Then a week later, November the 25th, that was November the 16th, the stories broke Friday, November the 16th, and by November 25th, that's just a week later, another witness to the Al Bramlett case was murdered. That was Tom Hanley. He was a Nevada union organizer, and he confessed to killing Al Bramlett. He was the man who allegedly confessed that he did the job with Al Bramlett, and he was in a jail in Las Vegas, Nevada, and he died just a week after this story broke, and he had testified as a government witness in a racketeering trial. Hanley was 63 years old and allegedly under guard at a hospital in Las Vegas, and they didn't believe that an autopsy would be made. They had no way of knowing how he died, and he supposedly died in the jail. But, of course, it's Tom Hanley, who was hired to kill Al Bramlett, who would be the connecting link of Nixon and the payoffs. And so a week after this story broke, Al Bramlett was killed in Las Vegas, Nevada, and he died under guard in the hospital to, again, silence the connections to Richard Nixon and the payoffs and organized crime connections in Arizona and in Nevada. I did a lot of research on the Al Bramlett murder of the Culinary Workers Union in Vegas, because at that time the Howard Hughes Empire owned these hotels in Las Vegas, and they gave some kind of an order suggesting killing the persons that were running these strikes. There were strikes for higher wages at the hotels and the Culinary Union, and there was a talk of murdering the labor organizer if he interfered and tried to raise their wages. And so the head of the Culinary Workers Union, Al Bramlett, was murdered. And I have studied that, and as I say, Tom Hanley was put in jail for it. But if he were to talk about who hired him, it would break this case wide open. So this was filed, the Bramlett story, under labor organizers and also under the Howard Hughes Empire. And I think it's interesting that the name of Bramlett comes up now as why he was murdered or what gang murdered him. And as I say, a week later, the man who allegedly did it is bumped off when the story breaks open. There's another story out of West Berlin called Political Time Bomb of a Nazi Legacy. It says that 34 years after the demise of the Third Reich, the United States authorities have 40 tons of old Nazi documents and files. So they have the names and personal data of millions of Germans affiliated with the Hitler movement. This list is kept by the government, and it's been secret. It was kept in the SS bunkers in West Berlin in the American sector, and the Nazi Guard members have kept the names. There were 400,000 brown shirt stormtroopers, 230,000 SS elite guards, 60,000 SS officers. Well, about 26 men were hung at Nuremberg, and the rest are alive today unless they've died of old age. So stashed away, according to this article, in underground depository are the files and names of Nazi teachers, medical associations, and so forth. In 1967, there was an effort with West Germany to get the names, and they still have not given them to us. And according to this article, it's called a time bomb. Under lock and key, in a U.S. installation, are the names of these people. And this article says that the Nazi Reich conquerors would never want anyone to get their names on these files. They're useful to show who belonged to the Reich so that they can use them again or trust them. But if they came out, we would know who in the government today, running the various police departments and the various districts and councils, were part of either the stormtroopers, the SS elite guards, or the SS officers. The West German courts don't want to turn these over. They have the list of these people. There were 61,000 that were accused of serious Nazi war crimes. And at the time, only 6,300 were convicted. 163 got life terms, no death penalty. And, of course, we know there's only supposed to be one person locked up at the time for these crimes. This material is a time bomb. It's referred to as a time bomb of the Nazi legacy, but they will not release it because this would be the backbone of World War III and the people that are in power today that they can trust. And the United States has been in collusion to protect this list of people and not let the names out to follow where they are today. I'm sure many of you read about the false alarm, the six-minute alarm on the nuclear attack that went off. The computer didn't work. We had a false missile attack, and the airplanes went out from Kingsley Field in Oregon and from Sawyer Air Force Base in Missouri, and six from a Canadian Forces base in British Columbia. I have to laugh because many of you know that I really do want to leave the United States and move out of the country before too long, and I bought property over in British Columbia, and when they sent those planes out, they were approximately 6 miles away from where the property is that I bought. People say, where can you escape or where can you go to? But I guess the U.S. Forces alert system, I knew that there were these bases nearby, in the town nearby, but when the false alarm went off, the planes went right out. Either I'll be very protected in that little location, it'll be the first place to be bombed out, but I was surprised to see the city on the map when I read where the planes came from British Columbia. I've done many, many tapes on the Vatican money that's been missing, and Mr. Sindona, I haven't updated that recently now that he's appeared and the Pope's gone home, the trial for the bank in New York City for taking the money from there and manipulating their millions of dollars hasn't gone to trial yet. That also is very quiet. We could do a whole year of tapes on quiet matters that never get a follow-up. But there was only one paper in the United States that I have clippings from that linked the missing Vatican money to Mr. Sindona and organized crime. We, as I say, we have articles, and I've done tapes on Sindona and the links to organized crime, and there's been current articles that the Vatican is missing money, and I've made those connections of Sindona and the Vatican to organized crime. But the Houston Post, of all papers, has an article, Vatican reportedly lost millions on Sindona's dealings. And they were making connections between the misuse of $45 million of the Franklin National Bank and their missing money. And while we know the Pope had a meeting of his various cardinals after he came home from the United States and talked about the Vatican losing $20 million a year, it was the Houston Post that really ran a story, I was very surprised, on the links of the missing money to specifically Mr. Sindona's dealings. And, of course, those do tie in to the Gambino family and organized crime. But it's funny that you wouldn't expect that in the Houston Post. I've learned from a long time of experience that you take a cross-section of newspapers from around the country, and where you least expect it, you sometimes get a glimmer of truth that the other papers are leaving out. This one came from Houston. We haven't heard a word of Sindona since he appeared and since three of the major witnesses were killed in Italy and since the Pope had his meeting. I wonder what's going on there and if this case will ever really go to trial or if it's going to go to the dead bone pile of affairs that just fade away and better left alone and not brought up again. I did get in a letter, and I might mention it, there was a suggestion, a criticism that I go into certain questions such as Rockefeller's death last January and then ignore the cause or the effect of it and in quotes, you walk right away, right off, and leave it, or just forget it. Many of these events become non-events. They're not followed up. The Jonestown affair we went into at length, and then it was dropped, and there's no criminal investigations. There's nothing into exposing who formed Jonestown, who bought the property, where the missing hitmen are. There's never been any more on Mr. Eshakoff, the doctor that ordered the cremation of Rockefeller, or David Lipstick, or Porchetta Pierce, or the people involved with the Rockefeller death, the missing John Paisley of the CIA, National Security Agency. His wife couldn't get insurance for him because they said they still believe he's alive, the discrepancies there at his death, and the cremation again without her seeing the body. The Sindona affair, the missing Vatican money. We could go through crisis, just the crisis that happened last year, the unsolved murder, the passing the buck. These are unfinished. I don't forget them, and I'm not walking away, but they just go into the file of non-events as if they didn't happen, and somebody just hopes that nobody will remember them. I don't know if I'm allowed to use obscenity when these tapes are played on the air. The newspaper is certainly printing a lot of obscenities, and, for example, in San Francisco, Joe Freitas is running this week for district attorney again in a runoff, and he was close to Tim Stone and Jim Jones and the whole Jonestown affair and didn't investigate it, covered it up, and he had a meeting with some people. He's campaigning in San Francisco. I can't believe that Freitas can face the public after what happened with Dan White and George Moscone and Harvey Milk's murders, the way White was prosecuted or the DA's office is run and covering up the voting scandal, Jim Jones links to DA Freitas in that office. But Freitas was running for the DA this week, and yesterday at a press conference, and somebody asked him, well, what were your links? How did you cover up Jonestown? And he got simply furious. This is in the San Francisco Chronicle, and he just said, fuck you. And this is the district attorney of San Francisco, who never has been asked that question publicly. And then, this is again from the Chronicle, he called the reporter an asshole, said, you asshole, and huffed and puffed and went away. Now, that is the answer that the district attorney in San Francisco gave. I hope the radio programs forgive me or they can bleep it out, but I read it in the newspaper, so it's a direct quotation from the San Francisco Chronicle. That is the response that the district attorney in San Francisco gave to a question when he's running for office about Jonestown. He's just so blatant that they don't give a damn. I mean, this is the kind of vulgarity to a very serious matter when 923 people were killed. And that's the way he responded to a question when he's running for office at the city. And that's the only answer he gave. And that's how he feels about it. And what are all those deaths? What are the assassination teams that are on the loose? That's all he would say about the matter. And that's how he feels. And if the public accepts that, that's what they're going to get. Our butchers who just use profanities when they're asked hard questions. I've been getting letters from various listeners of the tapes asking me what I think about these oil spills and these explosions and spilling of chemicals and various fires and leaks going in plants and accidents, plane crashes and bus crashes and so forth. And I'm getting letters, are there too many of these? What do you think is happening? And that's why it's so important that I began to read the book Sabotage that I referred to earlier, the one by Albert Kahn and Michael Sayers. And that was written in 1942, and it tells about the purposeful intention of the Germans to destroy the United States from the inside up till the war and up through the war years, and I'm sure they continued afterwards. And it tells about burning bridges, blowing up tanks, setting fires, assassination teams, chemical spills. And I actually believe that a lot of this is happening. And along those lines, there was an article just last week in the newspaper, a question and answer, asking if Babcock and Wilcox, the company that built Three Mile Island, is it true that the people who own that were sent to jail because of negligence? And the answer was no one was sent to jail because of the accident at Three Mile Island. Babcock and Wilcox, manufacturer of nuclear plants, was bought for $748 million last year by J. Ray McDermott and Company, builders of offshore drilling platforms. Several months ago, four McDermott executives were fined $282,000 and given suspended sentences of 1 to 3 years for price fixing. The four were Charles Graves, Robert Ritchie, H.W. Bailey, and H. Roger Reeves, none of whom have gone to jail. The McDermott Company, however, has been fined $1 million for making illegal political contributions and for racketeering. Now, I'm wondering if the I have wondered about the nuclear plant being sabotaged and, again, destroying our confidence in our own energy. I know we don't have a place to take the waste, but France and England and various countries are building nuclear plants. And I'm wondering if our places are sabotaged along with other leaks because this costs millions and millions and millions of dollars and slows down our energy or our ability to defend ourselves. Remember how the Germans had synthetic fuel? They had rubber for tires. They had an economy that sustained itself even if there was a blockade. But we are totally dependent, and if our oil is cut off and our energy is cut off, and I know that so much of the racketeering and organized crime works with the saboteurs, and so this article says that these people worked with and made contributions, political contributions, and so forth, and worked with racketeering people, so that Babcock and Wilcox manufacturers was sold to J. Ray McDermott and Company, and these four people who bought it are at the least not very kosher, but goodness knows what is going on with so many plants leaking, and there is the possibility that that could have been sabotaged and mishandled to create one of a thousand crises which we're going through right now. I do want to, in the next few weeks, just do a run-out on some of the medical spills, the accidents, the leaks, and what's taking place all across the country is just shocking when you add it up. The fourth and last Montoya brother died this last week, and I didn't see his name once on any national television. I was watching the Iranian crisis across the board. If you saw it, let me know. It was a UPI story, Albuquerque, New Mexico, State Senator Theodore Montoya. He was one of four politically powerful brothers. This reminds me of John Kennedy and his older brother, and then Robert, and now Ted running. There were four brothers that were all state senators, and one of them, Joseph Montoya, was on the Senate Watergate Committee, and there was a suggestion at some time of possible links of organized crime, and I don't know whether the Montoyas were linked to the Phoenix, Arizona operation, and that's why this man just died this week. He's 44 years old. They said he'd had one other heart condition before, but I think of William Harvey and Sheffield Edwards and these other important people dying at the time of the Senator Church Committee. He was chairman of the State Judiciary Committee in Albuquerque, New Mexico, in their Senate. There were brothers Tom Montoya, Joe, Al, and Ted. This one, 44 years old, he went to Oregon, came back to Albuquerque. Instead of going where his wife and family were, he stayed in an apartment that night, didn't show up the next morning, and he was found dead. Four people, four Democrats, four powerful persons in New Mexico and in Washington, D.C., all four brothers died within 6 years, and as I say, there really was a news blackout on the Montoya family. There was an interesting comment about the airplane over Antarctica that crashed this last week. 257 people were killed, and the newspaper said that they were looking for a voice recorder of the jet line that crashed, that they had 30 minutes of conversation that they found of the crew that they should be able to put together from this recorder. But the articles in the newspapers that I take said, in quotes, the black box that they're looking contained records of the flight data that has not yet been found. No bodies have been recovered yet, as the searchers are concentrating on locating the black box. They think that only 50 to 70 of the bodies may be recovered because of a polar blizzard after the crash, but they don't want the bodies until they locate the black box. That certainly sounds a little mysterious or strange, why it was important to get the box before you look for the persons on the plane. There are a lot of crazy things in the news that remind you of the insane times in which we live. One is an article out of New York. It's called The Defense Lawyer Who Won 299 Murder Cases. He's Sir Lionel Luckhoo of Guyana. He won acquittal for one client who killed his second wife with poison milk, even though the first wife died under the same circumstances. And then it says Lionel managed to clear every murder defendant he ever represented, and he made the Book of Records, the Guinness Book of Records, for the most successful criminal lawyer in the world. He had a perfect record of getting everybody off that he represented. This Sir Lionel Luckhoo of Guyana was knighted by Queen Elizabeth in 1965. He works in Georgetown, Guyana. And then it goes on to say he was Reverend Jim Jones' personal attorney and legal counsel to the People's Temple for 18 months prior to the Jonestown Massacre. He represented Jim Jones in fighting the custody case of the Stones. They wanted their little boy, the six-year-old boy, that stayed down in the massacre and allegedly died. The Stones haven't said much about him, and I'm not sure that they think he's dead or escaped with the boat people that did get away. There hasn't been much said about that little boy, and no proof that he died there. But it's interesting that a man that was knighted by Queen Elizabeth should also represent Jim Jones in keeping various American citizens away from getting their family in Jonestown. I think this is important because Jonestown was leased by people who had been to London. Tim Stone and Terry Buford had money over there for Jones in London, and the Blakeys, there were people that helped set up Jonestown that were directly involved in London. So here is a man familiar or recognized by the Queen and the royal family who is protecting that investment in Jonestown that was obviously set up by the British as well as American intelligence together. I have about 40 more important deaths that I wanted to talk with you or share with you, so we'll continue with those next week. Take care. I hope we're not in war during the next week, and keep well. It's Mae Breslin in Carmel, California, and we'll share the bad news again next Friday, okay?